podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donny Review system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I'm Boyd Hilton. Josh Landy, sidekick, is back in his Soho House style office. Rejoice, rejoice, Josh.
Absolutely rejoice. Wonderful to be home. Yeah. It's like when you're having work done on your stadium and you can't play your home games or something like that. I'm back on home turf. Delighted to be, but have a very pleasant stay at the in-laws, and thank you to them. But good to be home. Do the in-laws you haven't moved, Boyd. You're at home.
No. Do the in-laws listen to the podcast? So
we'll find out if they mention this conversation. Yeah. I don't think so. No.
Shout out to the in-laws, though.
You were very kind. You met my father-in-law not so long ago.
Yes, he was a delight. Yeah,
came into the club. Big difficulty is getting him back to normal seats after I took him to club level.
It's like when you fly upper class and then you have to go back to economy. Yeah, it's no good. Although, of course, Dean, who is our guest today, of AFC Camden fame, knows all about flying because he famously flew to the Man City game. And I'm not blaming you for that woeful performance, but you must have felt particularly let down and devastated by one of the worst performances of the season. Probably second only, mate. I mean, it was Man City, obviously. Maybe the recent couple have been worse. But that must have been a pretty disappointing affair, having flown there.
Evening, chaps. The main reason it was disappointing, actually, was because obviously I was flying up there and I was flying back the next morning. I didn't have the opportunity to drown my sorrows, which I really wanted to, because it was a pretty miserable evening and it's not been the best since. Obviously, we had a couple of good results against Chelsea and Newcastle, but it has been a bit of a downer ever since that point. But good experience to get up there by plane. That's one ambition ticked off, but I would have traded that for 3 points. I think most people would have traded a member of the family for 3 points.
That Man City game, actually, I felt a lot better about that game. After they defeated Real Madrid in very similar circumstances. I don't think enough people have pointed out that the way they played against us and Real Madrid was very, very similar. They kind of destroyed us right from the start with their intensity, didn't they? So it did make me feel better. Then having you tweeted, actually, which I think was very, very accurate. You said, proud of the boys during the first 8 months of the season, disappointed in them over the last 6 weeks. When you set new standards, you have to continuously meet them. Can't pick and choose when. We've been on the beach since securing second, which is disappointing. Standards need to be kept. That is pretty devastating, isn't it? We have that. The performance against Forest was woeful. I can't even bring myself to talk about it, really. And the one before, who were we playing? The one before, I've forgotten.
Brighton.
Oh God, that was diabolical as well. Do you think that's what it is? Do you think they're just kind of emotionally exhausted and just need a rest?
Yeah, big time. I actually saw the players before the game, and they looked pretty flat. This was around the team hotel, and. Yeah, there wasn't much of a bounce, there wasn't much energy. They all looked pretty flat walking onto the team bus, heads down. A few of them were kind of chatting amongst themselves. But it just felt like, even though mathematically we were still in the title race, as soon as Manchester City beat Everton 3-0, which was maybe the game that we were pinning our hopes on, it felt a bit flat. Like the stadium in the first half against Brighton felt a bit weird. I think everyone was a bit dejected in the manner of how Manchester City, after making 7 changes, just dismantled Everton. It was a bit of a weird atmosphere in the Emirates. It probably didn't help the team. You know, a bit of a nervousness or just a flatness around there. And then, against Forest, it was more of the same, really, apparently, in training. It's not been as buoyant as it has been, which you'd expect. I think we can all, you know, say that's understandable. They're human, they're young chaps, and they're still learning. But I think, as per my tweet, you know, you've set the standard for most of the season. Don't let it kind of fall off a cliff going into the summer, because unfortunately that's what people will remember, you know, that's what we'll remember going into the summer. It'll leave a bad taste in their mouth. And also new signings, you know, they'll be looking at that thinking, oh, was it a flash in the pan? I don't think this is going to be the case, but I think it's important to make sure standards are kept all the way to the end.
Yeah, it's devastating, isn't it, Josh, to think that people have such short memories. And I think in football, I've been saying this, you know, ever since we started doing the podcast, however many decades ago, but people, it's so easy to forget, so drab and disappointing have our recent performances been, that you forget how absolutely brilliant we were at the height of the first half of the season. And I mean, the first three quarters of the season, really. I feel genuinely gutted that, you know, this team has allowed enemies of ours, you know, the Tottenham fans and the kind of the Gary Nevilles. I mean, I'm not one of those who think Gary Neville is an enemy, but, you know, we'll just allow them to say stuff about our collapse. It's really annoying. And as Dean says, it just leaves you with a bad taste in the mouth. They really have to win against Wolves, don't they? They really have to put on a show, surely, for that game. Otherwise, it's going to be really gutting the end of this season.
You'd like to think so. And the fans, I think, want to show their huge appreciation for what was achieved this season. I mean, achieved being a strange word when they're not going to win anything. But even so, because it was a weird mood after Brighton, you know, it goes without saying most of the stadium were not there at the final whistle. And that doesn't feel right. And I'm sure even if Arsenal were somehow to lose against Wolves, people would stay because you're applauding what's happened across the season. But it is the worst, you know, kind of feeling of going to Nottingham Forest and losing 1-0 in a game where you felt, you know, it was all already over. And I'm not surprised to hear Dean talk about the demeanour of the players and what it was like, because, you know, it pretty much showed in the performance that we saw. And it's incredible to think 19 games into this season, we were on 50 points. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So 50 points in the first half of the season, and a maximum now of 34. We're on 31 for the second half of the season. So we can't deny it. We can't get away from it. It's a massive drop-off. If we'd have been able to keep up, you know, close to the form we did, we'd be looking now at winning the title. So it's hugely disappointing. And it makes you also realise how few of those days we've had recently, right? The Nottingham Forest and Brighton, it puts into perspective of what wasn't totally uncommon only a few years ago of losing a lot of football games. And Dean's right. I think there are two moments for me. I look back
on. Yeah, go on.
2-0 up at Liverpool, right? It gets worse the more you think about it and the more convinced that if they'd have come away with a win there, they go on and have absolutely all the confidence to go and win the upcoming games. They can go and get battered at Man City. It doesn't matter. And then, yeah, I mean, that Man City game, it's funny. I said the same thing, I think, straight after we did the podcast about the Brighton game, because why did we pin our hopes on Everton, who won 7 games all season, one of which was against us in Dice's first game? It's, you know, rationally, it was ridiculous that we thought Everton, if we're honest. But that's what we did. We allowed ourselves to believe. And, you know, Everton are, you know,
well,
not the ones you want to rely on this season.
No, but if you're going to be rational, I mean, if you're going to be rational about it, then I would just say that, you know, deep down, didn't we all know that our squad just isn't good enough to pull this off? You know, is that you know, we played the A team pretty much.
Well, we'll
discuss team rotation in a minute. But as soon as you know, we got some key injuries, we completely tailed off, and you know, had a couple of, as you say, you know, the Liverpool game, and then the West Ham, and then for them to happen again against West Ham, the 2-0 up, and you know, all of that. But I just think in the end, Why would we rely on Everton? Why would we rely on our own squad? It's just not deep enough, is it, Dean? I mean, you are one of the most relentlessly positive people on social media about Arsenal, and I admire that. But do you feel, is that bravado? Did you actually feel that our squad, you know, with a few injuries, could possibly keep this up against the relentlessness of Man City?
Yeah, you know, looking back in hindsight, maybe I was a bit too optimistic, but I think by nature, that's just how I tried to be. And yeah, and when I looked at that first 40 minutes against Liverpool, I was in the stadium and I was thinking, I didn't want to say it, but I was thinking, wow, we're going to do this. Like, I haven't seen us play that well at Anfield and completely dominate them and stifle them, you know, never gave them a touch on the ball for 40 minutes, Rob Holding or not. And I really believe that 2-0 up, we're probably going to do this. And then we let it slip. So I think it's a combination of, yes, Manchester City are relentless and their form since losing to Spurs has been incredible. But I think what is also true is we have kind of let it slip a little bit as well. So I think I've allowed myself room to be disappointed in the team because they set such a high standard. And I'm a big believer when you set that standard, you need to keep it. You need to maintain it because you've shown the world that you are at that level and at that standard. And I think there's nobody else who's going to feel like that more than Mikel Arteta, because you can tell he's just relentless in the way that he, you know, wants excellence from everybody. But then I do also think there are some mitigating circumstances. And I think, you know, I try to be quite pragmatic about it as well as feeling quite disappointed and dejected because, you know, I had Monday penned in as probably one of the greatest days of my life, hopefully, if we won the league and it was going to be an incredible trophy parade on the bank holiday Monday. But
oh, God, don't say that.
but like, I think age of the squad, you know, youngest team in the league, 24 years of age is the average kind of across the team, which is joint with Southampton, who got relegated. So two different ends of the spectrum there. And I think we have to take that into account. This is their first title run in for a lot of these players. So they'll learn from it. Last year, they learned from the top four race, I think, in terms of how they took it up a level for the majority of the season. So hopefully they'll do the same next year. And then also you mentioned we'll come on to rotation. I was having a look at some of the minutes played for our key players versus Manchester City's key players. And there's like a 10-game difference in some of them. And it's not just the physical capacity, it's the mental capacity. Like the Manchester City players who were on the bench against Everton, that it's not just the physical rest they got, it's the mental rest they got. So that they could go and put on that performance against Real Madrid that you alluded to earlier, Boyd. So I think that also is a fact that we need to consider.
With rotation, right, I totally get it. And you know, it feels, in hindsight, it feels ridiculous how little we rotate, Arteta rotated. But then again, I think if you go back to, you know, a couple of months ago, and in a game, you know, he'd have kind of rested, you know, Saka, who's played in every single game, or Martinelli before he got injured, or, you know, Odegaard. If he rested any of those key players, I think people would have been absolutely, like, would have been furious / in disbelief. Do you know what I mean? I just don't think the problem for me is we haven't got the squad yet to allow him to rotate properly. Whereas Man City have got cover in every single position, massive world class cover,
huge quality in every position.
Yeah,
as well,
huge quality. Yeah,
versatility.
So how could he possibly rotate when the people who would be rotating just aren't good enough? There are some exceptions. I do think it's really weird how he has not employed Emile Smith Rowe, for example, more. I feel that's just a whatever reason, it feels flawed that, you know, he was a player that could have done a good job, you know, couldn't he? You know, allow a couple of players to rest.
I think both things can be true, Boyd. I think you're right. We don't have the squad to be able to cope with the amount of minutes and the amount of intense games that Manchester City can. So I don't think Mikel Arteta has 16 players he can fully trust in that squad. But I also think there has been moments in this season and opportunities during the season to be a bit smarter with players. I can't remember what game it was, but Saka was ill. He didn't train. He was on the bench. Yet he still came on for the last half an hour. I think he was cruising 3-0 and 4-0.
Yeah,
so,
I remember that, yeah.
And he said something in a press conference, which in fairness at the time I lauded. He's like, the best players in the world play every 3 days, you know, without rest. And I get that to a degree. But I think he has got some learning to do on that front around rotation and resting of players. But then, you know, if you look at, you know, who do you think the player that's played the most outfield minutes this season is in the Premier League?
Is it Gabriel?
Gabriel. That's a great shout. Yeah, yeah. Manchester City's closest defender is about 1,000 minutes behind him in Premier League. In the Premier League this season, which just shows you the level of rotation they can do. They can bring somebody in and play at near enough the same level we haven't got the squad to do that. So I think both things are true. We need to be able to rotate a little bit better in future, like using Trossard down the stretch. I think there was an opportunity to do that. But we also need to make four or five really important signings this summer when you take into account the couple of players we're going to lose to make sure we've got 15 or 16 players the manager can trust next season.
Yeah. Josh, do you think, this is going to sound really harsh, but when that team selection against Forest with the mad defence where, you know, playing Partey at right back and here we are on the left and all that, it was just mystifying, wasn't it? I just feel like, I think Arteta's lost it a bit in the last couple of games. In substitutions have been weird. I just think what message did that setup was so odd, and it felt like he was trying to do a bit of a Pep, you know, kind of really inventive way of reconfiguring the defense or whatever. But it just didn't work, did it? And he didn't change it at halftime. He carried on with it, persevered with Partey, particularly terrible on the right. And it was just odd that he did that, didn't you think? I thought that was kind of like indicative of his slightly confused mindset of recent weeks. Obviously, with the caveat that he has been absolutely brilliant as a manager for this season. And most 99% of his decisions have been fantastic. And I think I feel sorry for him because I think he would have been a contender for manager of the season if we hadn't had this collapse of the last month. But as it is, it seems like a flawed period, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen glimpses, haven't we, of Thomas Partey playing small parts of games at right back. So we've seen it coming, but maybe he's also thinking ahead now to next season, right? And is it an option? And I wonder if there's a little bit of him going, well, what if I'd played Ben White at centre back and had another option at right back and tested that out? Because, you know, he went solid with Holding all the way through until it was kind of too late before even bringing in Kiwior. And I think he was just seeing another option, and much as all the talk had to be, you know, the title is not done, we'll be professional, we go there to win the game, make Man City win on Sunday. I think that's incredibly difficult. And it's not, you know, coincidence that, you know, the other end of the table, as soon as Bournemouth are safe, they lose three on the bounce, and, you know, that will make Everton feel really good about playing Bournemouth to try and stay in the division. So, yeah, I think, you know, desire comes into it when there is, you know, nothing on the line. And I think it's hard. And I think he was trying to inject something into them and do something different. And it backfired. Yeah. It backfired. But I don't think that means it will backfire on Sunday. I can see, you know, a bit of shackles off and the feeling of wanting to end the season on the positive note. And let's not forget, these guys could equal our 26 games the Invincibles won in a Premier League season, despite this nonsense in the last few weeks. They could still end up having, you know, won the same amount of Premier League football games as that side. And you know, if they can get 84 points, it's, you know, it's great. It obviously means absolutely nothing. We are going to be an absolute dead rubber. We are not going to be on TV on Sunday. And it will be a strange one where a little part of you is thinking, I wonder if there'd be more interesting sitting in front of a telly this afternoon watching what goes on with Everton, Leeds and Leicester. But I hope all Arsenal fans really feel that they want to be in their seats to applaud, you know, what has been our best season in a really long time. And in younger fans' lives, quite possibly the best season in their lifetimes, despite, you know, despite not ending the season with any silverware. So I won't be too critical on Arteta for going
for losing it. But no, I agree.
Are you calling for his head again, boys?
No, I'm not, no. I never called for his head. Did I? I still can't remember whether I did or not. I considered it, which does seem insane now. But a lot of us did, as we all remember. But there is some good news, of course. We do enter, I mean, one of the reasons why, obviously, we've delayed this podcast until nearly 72 hours after the game was so we could wait for the signing of Saka, who signed his new deal today, which was fantastic news. And Ramsdale signed his new deal as well the other day. I mean, the Saka really, that's so important, isn't it? I mean, he is just, and I, you know, even going off the boil, all of those players have in the last couple, I think he's gone off the boil less than some other players. You know, I mean, like Partey, whatever has happened to Partey is mystifying, isn't it? Like, I don't get, Dean, like, it's such a drop off. Was it that Man City game where he was completely bewildered almost about where to stand. And what, and he was completely, it looked like a kind of sad, tragic kind of look on his face. And I feel like he's just been in a weird mood since that game and just been absolutely awful, his drop-off.
Yeah, you could probably pinpoint our drop in form as well with his loss of form.
Yeah,
because he's such an important player with the way that we play with the lone number six in there. He's responsible for a lot in terms of helping us build our play, but also breaking up counter-attacks from the opposition and being in the right place. And I think since the second half at Liverpool and the West Ham game where he made that mistake, he's not quite been himself, which has probably contributed to our loss in form as a team, because he's such an important player for us. But you can say that about a number of players. I think a lot of them have played too many minutes where they're just physically and emotionally exhausted. You know, they just haven't got that same explosiveness or that ability to keep going until the end of the game. Whereas, you know, on the flip side, Manchester City players are just incredibly fit and sharp at, you know, the right end of the season when it all counts. So I think all of that has contributed to it. And yeah, losing Partey from a form perspective during the most important part of the season. It's almost like last season where he got injured and our form fell off the cliff. He hasn't been injured, but he's kind of not been existent like he has been throughout the rest of the season. And it's been the same impact.
Yeah. I meant to, of course, I started that segment by mentioning the good news of Saka. So we should celebrate. That's my fault. For some reason, I then decided to talk about how sad Partey is. But let's
focus in on negative news at the moment.
Yeah. How about this? I'm going to try and be positive for the next half of the podcast. And there is a lot to celebrate, not just Saka. There's murals. There's dogs. There's possible new signings. There's a lot to get excited about. And we'll talk about that after this break. And we're back from the break. Among the many, I mean, there's the Saka signing, as I mentioned, the Ramsdale signing. Also, Josh, I particularly was very excited about the arrival of Win the dog. This kind of, did you see this Labrador? I think it was a kind of brown Labrador who was on the official Arsenal website. And Mikel Arteta had a kind of a lengthy quote about how much kind of Win the dog can help the players. The official dog of the training ground and of Arsenal. I thought it was fantastic as a kind of dog fan myself. Are you excited about Wynn?
Not as excited as you. I'll put it out there. This is one of the most exciting things I've ever seen you. yes, a chocolate Labrador. Is that right?
Mm. That's a chocolate, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I did see he got quite a bit of airtime on the club website. Is that right?
Yes, he did. Now, Dean, did you? I mean, you saw the players. Have you seen Wynn? Have you met Wynn the dog?
I haven't, and I have to confess, I'm more of a cat man, to be honest. So, nearly as excited as you, boy. Okay, I'll say it's a bit strange, isn't he? He does do some strange things, or he's got some weird tactics.
It's a bit Ted Lasso like.
Do you think Stuart
McFarlane be a subplot on Ted Lasso? Yeah, sorry, Josh.
Do you think Stuart McFarlane was sent out to do the photos and Win the dog, or was it sort of given lower down priority? Because it was almost like a really lovely profile photo amongst some sort of purple flowers, presumably in the grounds, almost of a training ground. Do you think there's like a, because you know on the Arsenal website you can always like buy the photos. They're always trying to upsell you. Can you buy a photo of Win the dog now on the website?
I hope so. We'll see. Yeah, maybe I'll make an inquiry.
I'm just looking at a few of these quotes here. Mikel Arteta has brought in the dog to help develop the family atmosphere at the club and says the reaction from players and staff alike has been incredible. He loves the word incredible, doesn't he? We always talk about family and being connected. A big family like we are at the club, and I feel like we are a family. We need a dog to represent that family. I think there are still things at the club that can be done to connect with people, to be more caring with people, to show love. I carefully chose a dog, and in my opinion, it's the perfect representative of who we are right now. Her name is Wynn. We all love winning, and Wynn needs a lot of love. So the love for Wynn, that was basically the feeling. And it goes on.
I think that's the most upbeat Arteta's been in the last month, I'm saying. So I think he'd rather hang out with Wynn than he would half the players, basically. You know,
possibly. I thought, Boyd, when you said there's something exciting happened this week, you were going to be talking about the mural of the supporters.
Well, and the mural, yes. Oh, I mean, I was going to come on to that, yeah. The mural is very, very exciting. Yeah, I haven't seen it in the flesh. I've seen my I posted a picture of me, the artist's impression of me. I found myself in the crowd. But yeah, it's a fantastic honor. 721, I think, supporters that only, you know, made it. And yeah, very lucky. I'm sure there's loads of people who deserve the honor of being
is
on
Dean
that
on
more
it?
Than me. Dean, are you on it? No, no.
It's a shame. I thought Dean would be in a little plane just sort of flying.
Yeah, yeah. That would be fantastic. Yeah, it should be.
Missed my opportunity. But no, I think it's great what the club are doing, and they've been doing it all season to really reconnect and re-engage the fan base. And it's really made a difference, I think, over the last 18 months. So it's a credit to them, and congrats to you, Boyd, for making the cut. Well deserved.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. Yeah, I don't know which bit of the stadium this meal is going to be. We'll see it on Sunday. I guess it's like clocking, I'm guessing, because I think I'm pretty sure that all the others around the kind of north back end and a finish or kind of other things. So I don't know if it's, I mean, I'll be certainly tracking it down avidly. Are you there, Josh? Are you in it, Josh?
No.
An oversight.
Well, remind me your criteria, Boyd.
I think the criteria, the main criteria, if you're a fan and not like a actual, like there's some people who work for the club who are on the mural, I know. Amy Lawrence is on it, I think, you know, for example, because she has a proper association officially with the club rather than just doing a podcast. She does a podcast as well. I think the official, you had to have been to 350 games, I think, didn't you? Which is pretty much, you know, the whole time we've been at, which is a lot, which, you know, I've been there at the Emirates from the start and was regular at Highbury as well. So I guess I deserve to be there as much as any normal fan without wanting to sound boastful about it. But it is luck, really. It's mainly because I go with Dermot. I think that we're kind of, you know, me, Dermot.
Doing yourself a disservice there, boys.
Well, yeah. But it is fantastic to see, I have to say.
Yeah, and 350 odd games is a great knock. It's a massive commitment, you know, going
yeah, it's
every
weird
week,
to think.
Every week.
Yeah, especially all those really boring games in the late Wenger period as well. sorry.
You should be taken off for that comment. They should go and get whatever magic eraser, yeah, get rid of you, yeah, and replace you with someone that was grateful to the wonderful Arsene Wenger.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Yeah. Let's talk about some transfer speculation. I was fascinated. I mean, I think we all knew about, you know, we knew about certain players we've been linked with. But the one I was surprised about, and Ornstein himself, the man, the god, the legend, who knows all things Arsenal, was talking about our link with Man City's, another Man City player, Gundogan, which took me by surprise. I have to say, what do you think about that one, Dean? You're a man in the know. Is that like, he's basically the club, Arsenal are interested. He's coming, he's got the end of his contract. You know, he can leave Man City. What do you know, is that going to be another extreme? I mean, that would be... I mean, Jesus was one thing, Zinchenko was another thing, but he is phenomenal. He is an absolute genius, isn't he?
And he's a leader. He is like the leader at Manchester City. So he would be an incredible signing. It's a weird one. I don't know how I feel about it. Like, you know, how many Manchester City players do you actually want to sign? But then people remind me, you know, when they first started spending money, they pretty much took all of our players. You know, yes. Adebayor, Kolo Touré, Gyökeres Clichy, Bakary Sagne, Samir Nasri. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit of payback for that all those years ago. But it'd be a tremendous signing. I think, obviously, the news this week or last week broke about Xhaka. It looks like he's going to be leaving the club. Going to Bayer Leverkusen. So I think we needed a midfielder, even with him and Partey. So if he's leaving, it suggests we're going to need to bring in two midfielders this summer. So, you know, everyone's talking about the main target that's been, you know, out there for months, Declan Rice, and, you know, remains to be seen if that gets done. I think we're all very, very hopeful that it does. But, you know, Gundogan would be an incredible signing. He fits that left eight role perfectly. He'd bring a lot of leadership to the club as well. But, yeah, it might be posturing from the agent. I don't doubt our interest, but, you know, ultimately, I think what he wants is a longer contract at Manchester City. And if they offer him that, I think he'll stay, but you know, nice to be linked with him.
Yeah, he's 32, Josh, isn't he? But he is one of the best players in the world. I think he's particularly in this last period. He's just been that goal he scored the other week, which one of the goals.
The one at Everton was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. Would you be excited if he came, Gundogan?
Yeah, of course you would. I mean, he's how many Premier League titles must he be on? by now. He's been all there of them, for five, right?
He was Pep's first signing, wasn't he?
Yeah, so he's been there for five Premier League titles.
Yeah.
And plays. Like, this is not a... This is not even, you know, it's not even up for debate on whether he improves what's going on at our club. It just, yeah, would seem, if there was a school of thought that Man City selling players to Arsenal a year ago was not seen as quite an immediate competitor, and that's how maybe Zinchenko and Jesus ended up at Arsenal, you can't use that argument anymore. So you'd think Man City would do sort of everything possible to keep him away. But wow, I mean, if he came to the club, that would be huge. This big deal is coming. It feels like it, doesn't it? Declan Rice is favourite to go to Arsenal. We've spoken about it a lot. And I'm convinced we'll come back in August with a better squad.
The other one, Mason Mount seems to be a possibility. I've always thought he was really good, Mason Mount, actually. So I'd be happy with him. I certainly wouldn't snub another experienced England player. You know, kind of that helps, I think, doesn't it? You know, and also, I mean, Caicedo is the other one. I think would be fantastic. I mean, he's just absolutely been brilliant at Brighton. So, and there's that Ajax player as well. You know, I think Allsen mentioned. You know him, who's come to the end of his contract.
Kudus.
Who's supposed to be another very kind of flexible attacking player. Who his stats are fantastic this season, aren't they? He's scored loads of goals, etc. Do you think, Dean, as a man, again, I keep calling you a man in the know, but you're a man in the know, that you know, we can sign two or three of those really big, those are going to be expensive players, aren't they? All of those, apart from Gundogan, who's, you know, in a different situation.
Going to be a big summer for the club. And I think there's a lot of speculation and talk around it, but it feels different this year. It feels a lot more concrete. It doesn't feel like the old, you know, the war chest stories coming out for season, you know, ticket renewal time, which all of the cynics used to say happened like clockwork every season. You know, this is genuine. I think this is stage four in the process, I believe, you know, that Mikel Arteta continuously talks about. You know, the Declan Rice deal has been talked about for months, and that would be a huge statement for the club, but... You know, I can see us easily spending £250 million this summer, which sounds a lot. But then if you take into consideration, you know, we're likely to sell Balogun, Xhaka, Tierney. You know, there's talk around Smith Rowe potentially leaving the club, maybe being part of a deal going the other way to West Ham if Declan Rice comes in. You know, we could easily make £75-100 million in sales as well. And I think if you look back at the clubs, aside from the Manchester Cities and the Chelseas that have generally done well, and I'm probably just singling out Liverpool here, but they've traded exceptionally well over the last 10 years. They sold Coutinho for 160 million and they brought in Van Dijk and Alisson. So what we've not done very well for the last 10, 15 years is sell players for good value, because either we've let their contracts run down to the last year, or we've just not been very good in terms of negotiating those deals. If you sell players very well, it gives you so much more muscle in the transfer market to go out there and spend a lot of money. So I think, you know, it's going to be a big summer for the club in terms of spending money, but also I think in terms of incoming from players that we sell. So yeah, very excited. And I know we've been a bit disappointed about how the season's ended, but I think there'll be immense pride on Sunday and then a lot of excitement come June 1st, when I believe it's June 1st, or I don't know when it is exactly that the transfer window opens. And yeah, we start seeing some movement on that front.
Do you think players like Tierney? Do you think Tierney's definitely on his way? I mean, it was notable that he didn't, you know, pick him on the Forest game. He's been used sparingly, hasn't he? Even with Zinchenko injured, you know, he still hasn't picked him that much. And Smith Rowe, I'll be really sad. I think I love Tierney. Tierney's been, I mean, it's weird to think, isn't it? Like two seasons ago, Tierney was one of our best performers, wasn't he? Week in, week out, you know. Now he's like surplus to requirements a bit, which I think is sad. But I think Mr. Smith Rowe would be really sad if he left. But he doesn't seem to be.
I feel more likely that Smith Rowe leaves the club. Really? I think he's been the one that's given less of an opportunity than Tierney has. And there's a school of thought that it's certainly not an inferior team with Tierney, you know, in the team. You know, Zinchenko, we've loved him. He's been an improvement on the squad, but there have been moments and mistakes that have cost us, that have come from him. And Anfield, you know, being one that will forever haunt us and come to our mind. So, you know, of the two, you feel with midfield reinforcements to come, the opportunities that he has been given Smith Rowe and the number of minutes he's played at a time where Arsenal's squad has cried out for mixing it up and giving other opportunities, makes you think that the club are now willing to let him go. And it's a strange Arsenal career, isn't it? Because, you know, a couple of years of loan moves a year ago, ending the season, as I look here, having played a part in 33 of the 38 Premier League games, and then, you know, sat on a 11 games this season, the vast majority off the bench. It just makes you think, you know, his time has probably run its course. I really hope it hasn't for Kieran Tierney, because you need two great players in each position if we're going to go again next year. And I don't envisage how you're going to bring a better quality left back into the club to potentially be back up to Zinchenko than what we've got already. So I hope, even if Tierney wants to go, the club dig in and convince him to stay.
Interesting. Here's a question for you before we go on to the predictions of the Wolves game. I wanted to mention Man City. How would you feel, Dean, if in like 2 years' time, when this ludicrous, these 115 charges that Man City have been charged with finally comes to some kind of resolution, and Man City are found guilty of some, at least some of them, and their punishment is basically that they will have some of their recent titles removed, because those titles were essentially fought on the basis of cheating, and Arsenal were installed as the winners of the 2022-23 season. How would you feel about that?
How would I feel about that? It's a weird one. I was joking with a mate. Imagine they retrospectively docked Manchester City 10 points and then we lost the league on goal difference. How funny would that be? But it's weird that, you know, football is all about moments for me. It's that moment that you celebrate a goal. It's the moment that you win the league title. You're there with your mates. You celebrate, you know, pitch invasion, out for the rest of the night. You know, that would have been taken away from us. And ultimately, that's what we do it for. Obviously, you know, we talk about football. We love watching football. But a big part of it is the social element and the friends that you make. So I think you'd feel robbed to a degree. You'd also feel an element of vindication. I think the weird thing is, obviously, the charges need to be brought and they need to be proved in court. I think everybody feels quite similarly about how Manchester City have got to where they've got to. But we can also kind of admire what Pep Guardiola has done with that group of players, because money is not the only reason why you win trophies. Like, Chelsea's a perfect example of that this season. You need, you know, a very good manager and, you know, good people making good decisions. So you can kind of separate the two in terms of, you know, fair play to what they've done on the pitch. But the reality is the journey that they've taken to get there is probably, I say probably because it needs to be proven still, not been a fair one. So, I don't think I'd feel particularly great about it retrospectively.
Yeah. How about you, Josh? I think the reason I ask is because I do feel like particularly sad that we lost this title. I am one of those people who I thought this was such a good opportunity, such a unique opportunity. And I'm not saying that Arsenal won't manage to keep up the level of performance, particularly, you know, if we sign Declan Rice like that, you know, for just for one example, like that's a massive boost to our squad and, you know, we should make us even better. But I just think this was a season where they didn't start brilliantly and we completely took control of that. You know, we were on top for 90% of the season. And I do feel like, is that going to happen again in the near future? Like that, I just feel that the sad thing, they are going to dominate. If he stays manager, and they keep buying all the best players in the world, I don't think anyone can compete, really. And that's, I find that, and I do think it's on the basis of, you know, some extremely dodgy, allegedly, you know, apparently practices. What is this rambling question? I guess I'm like, do you feel, I feel like there is a big asterisk by Man City, these trophies they're winning, this league title. I wouldn't feel particularly thrilled if we ended, you know, if they ended up being punished and lost this title. But I am annoyed that we're having to deal with them. We're brilliant. Altus is doing a brilliant job, but how can we possibly compete with them? Do you get what I'm saying?
Sure.
Thanks.
It does feel an element of when does Pep Guardiola leave and does the whole pack of cards fall down when he does, or what is what he built now going to be absolutely there for the next however long? And it's a worry because 5 out of 6 Premier Leagues is, you know, at what point, you know, can we really point the finger at Scotland and suggest it's not a competitive league? And yet here we are 5 times out of 6. And we are dealing with a club that are just rolling over teams week after week and are likely to be treble winners. That's the most likely scenario, likely to be treble winners in a way that we haven't possibly seen. Because even if we think back to that Manchester United team of 1999, it was only a year prior. They hadn't even won the league. You know, Arsenal had beaten to the league. Arsenal were a penalty kick away from stopping them in the FA Cup semi-final, and but for Nelson Vivas's defending at the back post at Leeds, like, they might have just won the Champions League that year. Whereas this City team is like, you know, ended up winning the league with 3 games to go. They have not really looked flustered in the Champions League remotely. They've just destroyed the champions of Europe 4-0. We'll see what happens in the cup final against Man United. But this is actually uncharted territories of having a team this good. And it's difficult to see how, even if you right now, you ticked and you went, oh, yeah, we're going to bring in Declan Rice and Mohamed Kudus and Caicedo, and we're still going to beat City next year. Right now, none of us could say that we are. You know,
and they're only
odds on to win the title.
Yeah. People keep saying, well, you know, Man U and Liverpool, all the big clubs are going to get better. I don't care about them. It's City that are going to get better, Dean, aren't they? Because like Haaland, for example, one of the reasons why early in the season they weren't quite firing on all cylinders because they were trying to incorporate him into the team. Famously, people started talking about whether he was a hindrance rather than a help, and then went on to score 52 goals.
Funny,
but like next season, I think they've learned how to incorporate him now, and they're just going to be. I just, it's like you are very optimistic. So do you genuinely feel like we can compete? We can beat them in that 10-month epic league campaign when they are such a machine still.
They are a machine. And the thing when it comes to the finances, just very quickly, that makes them so different, Boyd, is the fact that they can pay players 250 grand a week to sit on the bench and come in and play a bit part throughout the season. Whereas other teams just can't afford to do that. You know, we can't afford to do that. That's why we need a blend of younger players on lower wages with potential and so on. So it makes it incredibly difficult. And it's, you know, it's not fair. It's not probably the most competitive league because of that. But I am optimistic about next year, and there's one reason for that, and his name is Mikel Arteta. He's been at that club. He's been inside, you know, Pep Guardiola's war room, if you want to call it that. He knows how that club works from the inside. He knows what steps they've taken to get to where they are today. He's not going to have the same resources, but if any man knows how to kind of unlock that or find a team to potentially beat that, and he showed that for a large part of the season, I think it's Mikel Arteta. So, you know, as long as he's backed properly this window, which I think he will be, and we get the deals over the line that we weren't quite able to do in January, which may have been the difference, you know, who knows? I think we stand a very good chance next season. It's going to be difficult with Champions League football. It's going to be a lot of stress on the players, but we're the youngest team in the league. They're going to be a year more experienced. They've still got that vitality. They've got age and time on their side. So, yeah, you know, I'm optimistic about next season. As long as we have a good summer, which I think we will.
Oh, that's good. Okay, fine. Oh, yeah, Haaland,
optimism to finish.
Yeah, perfect. Haaland could get injured, you know. Yeah, Pep could walk out.
Surely he's going to get bored soon. At what point does he say, you know what, I've conquered this now?
You think I've heard a lot of people say, you know, if he wins the treble, maybe he'll just go, that's it, you know, what else can I achieve? But I don't know. That feels too predictable. Like he'd do something weirder than that, and you know.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as that kind of bloke. He's a bit strange as well, isn't he? He's just an absolute psycho when it comes to winning.
Did you, Josh? Did you watch? For some reason, I masochistically watched their celebrations, you know, after they won the league on Sunday. I mean, they'd already won, so after they beat Chelsea. I don't know, and I don't know why I did, but just out of interest, I watched it. And he made, Pep made Sky wait like half an hour before he went and did his interview with them. And the whole crowd had gone by that point. There was just an empty stadium, and all the squad and all the kind of, you know, the backroom staff just standing around chatting with their kids and stuff, and he just wouldn't go and speak to them. It was like that discussion they had, you know, on the Sky, where I was like, they were talking, they, like, Roy Keane ended up saying some absolutely bizarre things, which I just think he wouldn't have said if it wasn't the fact they went on for about half an hour longer. Anyway, but what the point of being that Pep is brilliantly weird in many ways, I think. I would quite like to Sky to ask him about the points, the 115 accusations. Though.
They wouldn't be asking him any further questions if they did that at any point, and wouldn't be get given any players to do interviews with or anything else.
So. You think that's really? Wow. Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? You have to be able to ask that question, don't you? I mean,
Look, is it Pep's to answer? You know, Pep could say, if there was any wrongdoing, it certainly wasn't Pep, was it? So... I don't know. I don't know that it's fair to ask Pep that question. And in that moment, you know, what he's achieved on the footballing pitch is unrivaled. And, you know, much as it hurts to say it and not nice to watch in a way to think that could and should possibly have been Arsenal this season. But I can understand. I also found myself watching it. So I'm sure a lot of Arsenal fans did. Yeah. And it hurt more than I thought.
Oh, same, yeah. I gutted, absolutely gutted. And the other thing I thought actually was the Gundogan interview, and he was so eloquent. He's so smart, isn't he? He's like, not only is he a genius footballer, and there were a couple of other interviews, I think, and I thought, well, they do buy smart players, like they, you know. And I think Arteta's learned a lot of that. I think a lot of his signings have been quite clever people, you know, who can string a sentence together. But you really did put it into perspective that their players are very intelligent. And they know what the fuck they're doing. Anyway, it's time for it predicts the last game of the season, Wolves. Now, I remind you that in previous years, sometimes that last game when you think, oh, yeah, you know, the team will, they'll give us a good send-off. There's been some terrible final games of the season. Was there a Villa one, I think, that was particularly horrendous in recent memory? What do we think is going to happen, though? Dean?
I do think we're going to finish well, and there'll be a real sense of pride around the stadium come Sunday 7 o'clock. So I'm going to say 4-1 Arsenal. We definitely won't keep a clean sheet based on the stats at home this season. So
yeah,
expect us to get a few goals, win comfortably, and leave the season feeling proud of the boys.
4-1, Josh.
I'll go 2-1. I do think Arsenal end the season with a victory. I really hope they do, and I hope it's a loud Emirates, and maybe it will be, right, because of the Brighton game, the aforementioned Everton win made it a strange one to start with, and then, you know, as the game went on, it wasn't good. Whereas there is nothing riding on it, and you just hope that it's loud and positive from the word go, because, yeah. We have achieved something. There is Champions League football back that we took for granted for years and years and years and years. And we'll, you know, that is something to look forward to, isn't it? So, yeah, 2-1, I think. Boyd, what do you think?
I'm going to go 3-1. Yeah, I think they have to put in a good performance. No messing about. Arteta, just, you know, revert back to as close as to our A team as you can. Keep it simple. Don't try and think too clever. They'll turn it on. Hopefully they'll turn it on. Yeah.
It is sad going to a game of football on the final day and there is nothing
on it
and you haven't already had the...
But really, what the difference this time, though, is different, isn't it? Because this time there is something to celebrate, which is how brilliant we've been for most of the season. And I think... I think all Arsenal fans will want to thank the team, congratulate the team. Like, you know, when the end of last year, oh my God, you know, the lap of honour, you know, because we were appalling last year and didn't even get into Europe, but because we were so appalling at the end of this. Whereas at least this time, we're second, beyond our wildest dreams. No one thought we were going to get this far. No one thought we were going to play this well. And so I think that's a proper reason to celebrate. in the lap of honor. That's different. So I've ended up, you know, making myself slightly better. Yes, Josh.
I've desperately tried to work out what you were going on about with the Arsenal Villa.
We did play Villa
on the final day in 2015-16. We won 4-0.
Oh, okay. So I don't know what the fight I was horror. Talking about.
We've got a very good record on have the on the final day. So.
Okay. In that case.
Hopefully. Yeah, I'm trying to look the last time we lost on the final day.
Oh, really?
I think you're going back a good 16, 17 years or possibly even more. 2001, I think, if I'm looking
That's
correctly.
Brilliant. Really?
That is 2005. We lost at Birmingham on the final day of the season. But I think that is genuinely the last one, which is a fairly impressive record. So
that's amazing. I would absolutely never have guessed that, I have to say. Oh, well, there we go. It's adding to
We're
my
here
general,
to educate.
Yeah, adding to my general senility as I get. Old,
maybe the last home game of the season, and then we've gone and won the last away game.
Just
to get you out of a hole there.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm thinking last home game is what I was thinking of, genuinely. But yeah, okay, fine.
Because I can remember one or two at some point, but generally we do finish well.
Yeah,
Boyd. Any big end of season lunches or dinners going on before the game?
I think we're going to have a nice lunch. Yeah, no. Dermot and Dan and Co. Right. Yeah. On Sunday.
Celebrate what's happened.
Yeah, for sure. We should do another podcast next week, shouldn't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's going to have changed. That is the slight problem, but we can reflect on.
We'll reflect on the highs.
Yeah.
And the lows.
We'll find something to say, or you can tell us about your latest celebrity going events.
Maybe. Right. Brilliant. Thanks, Dean. Fantastic to have you as ever.
Pleasure.
Pleasant flights coming up.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Josh. And yeah, we'll be back next week with our final. We don't carry on just doing podcasts for the sake of it in the close season. We're pretty much staunch on season podcasts. So I think it'll be our last one this time next week. Cheers, Josh. See you then. Bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.